Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone, excuse me, Michelle Bodkin, Jay Catch, talking all things going on in the sports world. Michelle, do you like do anything fun for New Year's, or are you kind of low-key? Because my house, which is we pull out like all the hors d'oeuvres and we just kind of hang out until it turns midnight really around my place.
I've kind of done a mixture of both things the last few years. I've actually been spending New Year in Pasadena with the Rose Bowl. So
sure. Good point. Good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's been a little bit different, but there were, it was called Secret Salt Lake. And they would hold these like New Year's Eve parties and give you like kind of clues that you had to go like sort of find the location. And then there was like a dress code for it. So like they'd have a theme, and one of the parties I went to was like 1920s flapper, like speakeasy sort of thing. Another one was a masquerade ball. So it was like ball gowns and masks. And that was the last one I went to. The people that were doing it moved away. So like they haven't done it for years. But that was something that I used to do. I've done the club thing on occasion. And then there's been years that I've just stayed home. And this year's probably going to be a stay home kind of year.
Fair enough. I've never heard of the Secret Salt Lake thing. It sounds like actually pretty kind of cool. It'd be kind of fun because you're trying to figure out where it's happening, what's happening. But then, yeah, you really don't know until the day of or whatever.
Yeah, it really was kind of cool. It was a little spendy. But it was really fun to, like I said, kind of find the clues, find where you were going, pick out an outfit that kind of goes with the theme. And then, of course, you know, you had the dancing and the countdown and all that kind of stuff. A little bit more of a high-end sort of deal. I wish they were still doing it because it was really fun, but I don't think it exists anymore. So kind of a bummer. But, yeah, it was cool while it lasted.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, we continue our theme of the show, kind of looking at like the year in review and the top stories for the local sports teams. And I want to start off, we're going to talk about the college programs here and overall, but Michelle, let's start off on the Utah front here, whether it's Utah football, basketball, whichever way you want to take it. What in your mind has been the biggest story for the Utes of 2023?
I mean, there's a couple of different ways we could go. I think probably the overall overarching for the entire athletic department is, of course, the demise of the Pac-12 and ultimately moving to the Big 12. I think that affected everyone, every aspect of Utah athletics that I cover, and it sure dominated a lot of what I was doing for a long, long time, more so than in some ways the actual sports that were going on, which I think in a lot of ways super unfortunate, because Utah athletics actually had a really spectacular year, and I think that was maybe another storyline. You know, you have, I forget how many teams now earn conference championships in that 2022-2023 year, which was awesome, including women's basketball, of course, gymnastics, softball, lacrosse. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a lot, but it was really, really fun to cover because so many teams did so well, including football. So that was awesome. That was kind of a big story. You know, you look at what happened with Cam Rising and Utah football this year. That was kind of a really big story. The will he, won't he, being on Cam Rising watch week in and week out until like they finally
Uno doctors, Michelle. Uno doctors,
yes,
come on now.
We love the Uno doctor, man. That was quite a trip and a ride. And then, you know, you look at what happened with gymnastics and Tom Farden, another really big story that I think honestly is still kind of playing out, and it'll be interesting to see where that one goes. But I think those are probably the top stories in my mind of kind of what went down with Utah athletics this year.
Now, so you mentioned a bunch of different ones there. I wanted to ask you just in terms of the football side of things, The whole storyline you mentioned, yeah, the Cam Rising situation and his, okay, does he return from injury? Does he not return from injury? But beyond that, it's just an absolutely ridiculous, ridiculous season in terms of you just look at the overall injuries that affected. And it really was kind of the storyline of the Utah football season was all the injuries that they absorbed and were able to kind of keep rolling through. And in many ways, it kind of caught up with him in that bowl game finally.
Yeah, yeah. I think... I'm more of a positive person, so I look at things in more of a positive light. I know a lot of people feel very negatively about it, but I thought it was a good test to see where Utah was at in building depth, because that was such a huge issue for them when they made that jump to the Pac-12 in the beginning years. And that was something that, you know, Whittingham and his coaching staffs, you know, emphasized so much. We got to build our depth. We got to build our depth. Our depth isn't where we need it to be in order to make it through a season and be productive. And, you know, it's obviously once you start getting into those kinds of depths, you're like, yeah, you're not going to be a conference championship team. Like, it's, nobody is. I don't think even Alabama really, or like a USC or Michigan, like, you know, they're likely not going to win their conference when you're starting to get into threes and fours and fives at various positions. But are you in a place where you can still have a winning season, where you can still kind of compete with some of the better teams? And Utah found out that they're in a place now that they can do that. So I thought that was really interesting. I thought that was a actual positive development. I get that fans maybe view that a little bit differently. But I think it was good for Utah to see really where they were at and what they have and maybe where they still need to improve and work on some things. And so I think, you know, the moves that we're going to see, you know, with recruiting and with going into the transfer portal, I think are going to reflect what they learned from this 2023 season. And I don't think that's a horrible thing.
Now, you make up the transfer portal, and I think that's kind of a storyline for both BYU and Utah, and I'll kind of get your thought on this, Michelle. Is we had Kelly Papinga on with DJ and PK, this is before Christmas, and he kind of, well, he didn't necessarily admit it, but he said that we may have taken too many guys via the portal this past year, and in many ways he thought it might have affected BYU's continuity, some of the gelling factor that needs to happen with the college football program, because you need to have guys that are together for some time to compete. You mentioned the fact that how this season went for Utah may have affect how they approach the transfer portal. I can tell you that the way BYU season went absolutely affected how BYU has gone about the transfer portal this season. They've been a little more, I don't know how to say it, they've kind of slow played some things, kind of letting things kind of pan out versus really kind of going hard and heavy early on. And I think that Utah is probably in a similar boat. Like, you learn lessons from this, and because the transfer portal is still relatively new, you don't necessarily have the perfect formula quite yet.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a delicate balance. I think you obviously want to retain as many people as you possibly can, which I think even though we have talked about, you know, Jaquindon Jackson hitting the portal, like a Mikey Matthews and a Nate Johnson, Justin Medlock, some of those guys are, you know, maybe guys that you want to keep, but like there haven't been enough of them that have left that's really going to disrupt the overall chemistry of the team, right? So they've done a pretty good job at retention. And so, you know, it is. It's a key of bringing in, you know, a strong high school class that you kind of overall hope will be like the core of the nucleus of your group. That most of them will stick around, most of them will grow through the program and kind of build that bond, that brotherhood, you know, build the culture, that sort of thing, be the leaders of the team that everybody looks up to. And then from there, you know, you hope to kind of plug in some weak spots. You know, if you're a little thin at a position group, you hope that you can maybe find a good transfer or two to bring in that will be productive, that will match, you know, what your core, what your nucleus kind of brings to the table. But I don't think you necessarily want to build a whole team out of transfers. And you mentioned BYU. We've seen that, I think, with other schools as well. You have, you know, USC. Like, it sort of worked well for them the first year, but it maybe backfired a little bit this year. You know, you have a team like Colorado that in some ways they improved, but did they really improve? Did they have that chemistry? Did they have each other's backs? When you're all strangers and you don't have any familiarity with the program or the culture or the expectations, it's kind of hard to get anything going, in my opinion. So it's, you know, like I said, I think it's a very delicate balance. And I think for the most part, Utah's found a good formula. I think BYU's feeling their way. And part of that is out of necessity, right? BYU's just in a very different place. They've made that jump to the P5 level or the P4 or the P3, whatever we're calling it these days. I don't know. But they made that jump. And so they're in that position of needing to build the depth and trying to balance how willing are we to wait for like some of our high school classes to catch up and get with the program versus just diving into the transfer portal and bringing in guys that are maybe a little more ready for the role, but don't necessarily have that chemistry or connection with our program. I think it's going to be interesting for BYU. It's something that they're going to have to really think about and consider, and they're probably going to try it a couple of times, different formulations, until they find what works for them.
Well, and you're right. You're absolutely right about it. And the kind of storyline for BYU, for me, Michelle, is the fact that they finally made that jump to, as you mentioned, I'm not sure what the term is, the Power 4 level, I guess, for now.
Yeah.
But they did make that jump. And did they have some high moments? Yes, they did. Mm-hmm. They beat Arkansas on the road after falling behind by double digits twice. They've got Cincinnati at home for their first ever Big 12 win. Like, there were some big moments, but the simple fact of the matter is they lost 5 straight games to end the season, and it ended up 5-7, so had a losing year the first year in the Big 12, and they have aspirations of improving. But going back to a point you made right there is that I think both of these programs, and I think BYU realized it after this past year, and they're going to kind of lean more into it, is they want to be more of a developmental football program, meaning mm-hmm. they're going to rely more on high school talent. I think Utah's done a really good job with this during their time in the Pac-12, where other programs, as you mentioned, are going to go out there and build their programs via transfers. Look at Colorado, the poster child for all of this. BYU realizes, you know what, we're not necessarily going to be able to be as transfer heavy as some of these programs out here, so you know what, we're going to kind of go in opposite direction. We're going to zig while everybody else is zagging over here, and we're going to go after the high school guys. And yeah, it may take 2-3 years to really build it up, but it's going to hopefully yield benefits with you guys. Speaking of BYU, they kind of cycle up and down, where Utah, they've kind of benefited from this, where every so often you have one of those teams that you've built them up, they become this dominant team, you enjoy that success for however long they're on campus, and then the hope is that that success breeds more success in the transfer portal and the high school recruiting ranks, where you can build it. And I think that's kind of the storyline for BYU, is they tried to infuse it with a bunch of talent via the transfer portal, and it had its moments, but I think they realized it's probably unsustainable, really an unsustainable model for BYU as a whole. And now the Cougars are kind of pivoting and saying, okay, we tried it. It didn't necessarily work as well as we thought. We're going to have to kind of reformulate this a little bit. And I think this year they've kind of, you mentioned, they've looked at the transfer portal as being, okay, we can supplement a little bit, mm-hmm. but they're looking more at high school and junior college talent as a way to build some sustainable success, hopefully.
Well, and I think especially with a team like BYU, right, you do have to kind of, I think, look for people that match the mark.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And it's harder. It's harder for BYU. It's harder for a team like Stanford to do that. It's hard for a team like Northwestern to pull that off, right? Mm-hmm. You have very specific standards. Now, all three of those schools have very different kinds of standards that they look for in their guys. Obviously, BYU has the religious honor code aspect of it. That's not for everyone. It's just not. And I think, to your point, you know, you look at high school kids, bringing high school kids in, and I think especially what BYU maybe is going to want to really focus on is, you know, local kids that kind of understand and are familiar with it, because it's a hard sell, I think, when you're kind of outside of that picture and you're hearing about that for the first time. It's like, whoa, what do you want me to do? Whereas, you know, you kind of grow up around it and it's like, you're like, okay, that's maybe asking a lot, but like, it's not so like outside the realm of normalcy for you. I think that's kind of probably where they're going to ultimately want to go, where they're going to want to try and build that nucleus that grows with them and creates that culture for them. And then from there, like you said, supplement, you know, guys that are maybe looking for a last chance, that, you know, everywhere else they've tried hasn't worked, so why not give this a shot for like a year or two? Not a big deal, right? Or, you know, looking for kids that, you know, maybe left out of state that want to come home, I think is another good place for them to look. Utah has a little more flexibility in the kinds of people that they can look for and bring in. You know, I think BYU has to have a little bit more of a rigid plan. And I'm not saying that as a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. You have a standard for yourselves. And I think in order to have success, you really need to lean into that. And that's just kind of knowing who you are, knowing who you need to go after, and not venturing too much outside of that.
Sure, and that's exactly it. I think that they are, speaking of BYU, they're trying to essentially get to that level. And yes, it's going to take some time to build it. And the other thing about it is NIL is a huge factor for both BYU and Utah. I mean, every football program out there, and every, I guess, college athletics program in general, Michelle, is NIL is a factor here. How mm-hmm. much money does your school have, or the, I guess the collective that's affiliated, or collectives, I should say, that are affiliated with your school, how much money do they have? How much are they willing to give X player here, X player there? And in essence, we've created essentially each school has its own salary cap, for lack of a better term, because mm-hmm. you have a certain amount of money. You're doling it out to however many players you've got here. And there are programs who have a lot deeper pockets than others, and that's going to absolutely affect both BYU and Utah, which I think you and I are both in agreement. They're never going to be at the top of having the deepest pockets in the college football universe.
No, I think what the hope is, though, is that some of those schools with the deeper pockets get burned by sure. overpaying for people. And so it will hopefully kind of balance things out a little bit. But for the time being, you know, I think both schools, both teams are going to have to, you know, clench those butt cheeks and say a prayer, because it's going to be a wild, wild ride, to be honest. This is all so new, and I don't think people have suffered bad consequences from this yet. And until that happens, people are definitely going to overspend. And a team like Utah, a team like BYU, they're not necessarily going to be able to keep up with that. So until it balances out, until people get burned and maybe decide that spending that kind of money on those kinds of players, maybe not a great idea, you know, you might lose some unfortunate battles more often than you would like to. But that I think that's the ultimate hope, though, for both of these programs, is that enough people get burned by making really bad, frivolous deals they didn't need to make, that it calms down the spending and you're able to keep and retain players that you want to keep and retain.
Yeah, it's a huge part of the math now. It's like, okay, what players do we have on our current roster that we just cannot afford to lose? And yeah, it's a crazy, crazy world out there, Michelle, and it's not slowing down anytime soon, it feels like.
No, it will take some time, I think. It will take some time. People are going to need to learn some lessons, some very hard lessons. And it, like I said, this is just so new. We're like, what, year two into it?
Yep.
And people, I think, kind of cautiously dove into it. Now we're getting into the crazy brazen part of NIL, where people are like, oh, well, there's been no consequences, so let's go ahead and do this wild thing. And like I said, I think, you know, in the next couple of years, that's where we're going to start seeing some heavy consequences. Not necessarily that like the NCAA or anyone punishes anyone, but again, it's you spent money that you didn't need to spend and you didn't yield the results you thought you were going to yield.
Yep, the ROI, man, the return on investment. It's got to pay off. And yeah, I think there's going to be a lesson coming that it's not always going to pay off that way. All right, coming up next, we'll dive into some of the other topics we haven't had a chance to touch on quite yet. We'll talk about the NFL going on this weekend. We're just a couple of weeks away from the NFL playoffs kicking off. We'll get to all that next. This is the Saturday Show right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Accessing.
This is Hans Olsen and Scotty G.
Head Football Windows, exclusively to Utah. Visit their showroom and see the wow factor that these unique windows create. PeachBuildingProducts.com.
Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. All right, Christian, I've been meaning to ask, why Red Hot Chili Peppers today is our bump back music choice?
Oh, man, I think I'm going to go see them next June. Ooh. They're coming to USANA Amphitheater.
Okay.
I've been heavily debating it, and then I think I'm going to go.
Hey, do it, man. Come on now. They're one of those iconic bands that's been around forever, and they aren't slowing down anytime soon, it feels like.
Yeah, and I really like USANA Amphitheater. I think that's a fun place to go see concerts at. And I enjoy going to concerts, so I think I might send it.
There's only one problem with USANA Amphitheater. I wonder if you guys have the same thought I have. I love going there. I'm with you. It's an incredible venue, but the parking situation is
oh, my gosh. It's horrendous.
In and out is awful.
That's
agreed.
My only complaint.
Agreed there.
But, Red Hot Chili Peppers, tempting. Tempting.
Yeah, that'd be a good one. That'd be a fun one to go to, no doubt. That's my only issue with USANA. Outside of that, if I could get in out of USANA in like a timely fashion, I would go to more over there. But here's the thing, Michelle. You and I are not we see the traffic that BYU and Utah football games get. It's pretty bad. USANA is somehow worse.
It is.
Like.
It is 1,000% worse.
One of those things. But, yeah, that'd be a fun concert to go to. I may have to do that one. By the way, we've got a really, really fun year ahead in terms of, like, the overall musicians and stuff that's coming to the state of Utah, because Blink-182's coming to the Delta Center. Like, we've got a bunch of really good concerts this coming year in 2024, folks.
I love good music. I love good musical opportunities. I have not had one in a while, though. So,
well, you've been a little bit busy, Michelle. Come on now.
I have been a little bit busy. Funny story about that, actually.
Okay.
So my brother came to me on my birthday this past year, and he's like, I got you the best birthday gift, until I realized it was not the best birthday gift. And I was like, what? And he goes, I scored tickets to go to TI and do like a meet and greet beforehand or something. I was like, yeah, okay. That sells me. Why was it not a great idea? And he's like, because I realized you'd be in Oregon State that night. So he was still planning on going, because he already bought them before he like realized that there was a game that night that I would have to go cover. And I don't know, like later that day he goes, well, you know what? You're going to feel a whole lot better about this. He just canceled the concert, so even I don't get to go.
Well, there you go. Hey, that's actually better in a way, so that's always positive.
Yeah, yeah. Very disappointed, but, you know, maybe another time.
Yeah, no doubt. But fun times all the way around. That is kind of the funny thing about the industry that we work in, Michelle, is like, we look at stuff and like, oh, that'd be fun to go to. And then you're like, hold on.
Nope.
I need to double check and see if the team or teams I'm covering, you know, have games or contests that day. So, because if so, guess who's not going?
Yeah, guess who's on the clock? This girl.
Yeah, that's the tough part about it, no doubt. All right, so time for 5 minutes of covering some of the other topics we have not had a chance to touch on quite yet on today's show. Let's talk about the NFL for a moment here, Michelle. Joe Flacco, by the way, talk about like the renaissance of renaissances for a career. This is a guy who's 38 years old. Everybody thought he was completely washed up, and all he's done is serve up 4 wins in 5 starts for the Cleveland Browns.
It's so funny because I saw him trending. I actually didn't realize he was even still playing, to be honest.
Well, I think a lot of people in the NFL are figuring out right alongside you that he's back in the league.
Yeah, yeah. Like, since he hung it up with the Baltimore Ravens, I had no idea what he was doing, where he was, if he even still was around. And so, like, it was actually just this past week that I realized he's still playing. And ironically enough, if I remember the moving around, the shuffling, that technically the Cleveland Browns were in Baltimore before they moved to Cleveland. So essentially he's playing for the Baltimore Ravens again.
Yeah, so actually, they do have a connection. They don't have the connection that you mentioned, but
yeah.
So the old Cleveland Browns moved to Baltimore and became the Baltimore Ravens, and then the NFL gave an expansion franchise back to Cleveland.
That's
because
right.
of the move from Cleveland to Baltimore. So yes, he is. There is still that connection to the Baltimore Ravens.
I just had it backwards. That's right.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's okay.
But yeah, there is still that connection there between those two, no doubt.
Funny. Very ironic. Love it.
Yeah, no, Other things in the NFL. So we have actually, so we're getting Monday Night Football on Saturday night tonight, Michelle. It's kind of a funny quirk in the schedule. ESPN moved their Monday Night contest. The Detroit Lions take on the Dallas Cowboys. They wanted to avoid New Year's night. I can understand that.
Well,
but,
Rose Bowl, too.
Yeah, as I say, there's all those games on New Year's Day. So, you know what? We'll put it on Saturday night, and it's a good game. Detroit Lions against the Dallas Cowboys. I think the Dallas Cowboys are still absolutely a paper tiger, even though they're 10-5. But the Detroit Lions, talk about a great story in their own right. What Dan Campbell has done has been very, very impressive.
Yeah. I mean, Detroit's been a joke in the league for a long, long time. I mean, really, truly, honestly, like you talk to Lions fans and they've been long suffering. So to actually finally see them kind of shaping up and maybe doing something is pretty exciting. I've been to that venue. I've been to Ford Field before to watch my Packers lose to the Lions years ago. This was like 2014. When Utah actually was in town to play Michigan, we also caught the Packers-Lions game that weekend. And yeah, Packers lost, Lions won that game. I don't think the Lions were actually any good that year. And I think that was kind of a fluky loss. But hey, I've been around Detroit. Detroit's one of my favorite cities that I've ever been to. And it was kind of cool seeing that venue.
Well, you talk about them being a joke. Do you know the last time they won a division title, which they have clinched? By the way, they won the NFC North.
Sometime back in the 90s?
1993. It's been 30 years.
Hey, I'm such a good guesser.
Yeah, you are a good guesser. It's been a minute. But, yeah, they're one of those incredible stories. This would be one of those games that I could see the Dallas Cowboys coming out and, like, all of a sudden, like, really blowing up, and everybody's like, see, Dallas is for real. I'm like, they're not for real, folks. Stop believing in Dallas. The Cowboys are not for real. I just don't. They've beaten everybody who's under 500 outside of them. Who'd they beat the other couple weeks back? It was their division game against Philadelphia. Outside of that, the Cowboys have feasted on, like, lesser opponents.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't. Cowboys have now been a joke for a while. And I don't ever trust that they're back. I am very suspicious of Jerry Jones, and I don't think he runs a very good, clean organization.
You and me both. Yeah, it's just one of those things. By the way, Michelle, we do get a battle tomorrow night on Sunday night between two former college quarterbacks in this state. We have Jordan Love starting for the Green Bay Packers against Jaren Hall for the Minnesota Vikings. Jaren back is the starting quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings. His only other start this season. He got that concussion that knocked him out of the starting position. So big opportunity for both Love and Hall, as both teams still have playoff aspirations. Whoever wins this game would go a long way to helping themselves potentially get into the playoffs. You lose, you're all but out.
Yeah, that should be a fun matchup. I'm really curious to see more of Jaren Hall. I know that it's kind of been a small sample size, and everybody's been a little bit disappointed that he hasn't been able to play, take advantage of the opportunity with Kirk Cousins being out for the year, because he ended up having his own injury issue.
Yes.
But so hopefully he can get through this game and ball out and show out and maybe show that he is, in fact, the future of the Vikings franchise.
All right, so Michelle, Puka Nacua, incredible story this year for the Los Angeles Rams. If I were to ask you this, so he is currently, if I'm not mistaken, he's 8 receptions away from breaking the rookie season mark for receptions in a single season by an NFL rookie, and 147 yards away from breaking the NFL rookie record for yards in the rookie season. Over 2 games, if I were to tell you he needs to get 8 receptions, 147 yards, do you think he gets it?
The way he's been balling out, I think he can do it. You know, again, it's the injury thing. Just don't get hurt, but keep doing your thing, homie, because you've been very, very impressive. That's been fun. That's a guy that I'm excited to see succeed, because his college career was a little bit rocky with the injuries, and so to see him be able to have a healthy season and show that he belongs at that next level is incredible. So I keep it going. But, you know, I've enjoyed the little bit that I've been able to talk to him over the last year with some of the work that we did with now I'm just losing.
Kids on the Move.
Yes, Kids on the Move. That was really fun getting to know him a little bit. And obviously I know his brother Samson a little bit better from his time at Utah. But, you know, he just seems like a really great kid. And I'm so excited for him. So that's awesome.
Yeah, the other thing about it is like the Kids on the Move thing. By the way, Hayden Erickson, obviously Ryan, his dad, helps run Kids on the Move. Hayden in the NCAA transfer portal, I'm very intrigued where Hayden ultimately ends up.
You know, I wouldn't necessarily – I have no intel on this. I don't know, and I don't know what he's looking at. I wouldn't be entirely surprised to see him maybe end up at BYU because they are a BYU family. But he happened to give Utah a shot first. So I could see him keeping it close to home and going down to BYU. That's kind of been the family team for a long, long time. That would be fun to keep him close to home so we can monitor him as much as possible. But I think that's a possibility for him. And who knows where else he's maybe looking.
Sure, no doubt. All right, Michelle, on the football front real quick, college football playoff, the semifinals coming up on Monday. You'll first at 3 o'clock have the Rose Bowl at 3 o'clock Eastern time, excuse me. It's 1 o'clock Mountain. No, it is 3 o'clock Mountain time, excuse me. I'm screwing myself up. But number 4, Alabama, number 1, Michigan, and they'll follow that up with the Sugar Bowl between Texas and Washington. Your thoughts on these two matchups, who are you expecting to advance and play on the 8th for all of the marbles?
Ooh. You know, that Michigan-Alabama game in the Rose Bowl, I don't have a good read on. I'm not sure on that one. You know, I do like Washington, though. They're just this weird team. Everybody, you know, has kind of been doing the, oh, well, they're just lucky. Oh, well, you know, they're not really that good. Well, someone's going to eventually knock them off. They're just a team that gets it done by any means possible. You know, it's no excuses for them. They get to work and they get it done, and it might be the ugliest thing you've ever seen. And yeah, you might sit back and go, wow, you guys are so lucky to walk out with that win, but it doesn't matter. It's still a win. They've just been that team this year. I think I've made the comparison. They remind me a lot of the 2008 Sugar Bowl team, that just, they had some head scratcher games. Why are you playing this team? So you should be blowing this team out of the water. And yet here you are, you know, blowing a team like Alabama out of the water. Make it make sense. But I think Washington's just that kind of team. So I like them in that game. I'm hoping that they advance over Texas. I think it's highly ironic that Sark is playing against his old team this year.
Yes.
But that's kind of my expectation. I think Washington gets it done because they've just been a team that's gotten it done all year. But as for, you know, what happens with Michigan and Alabama, I don't know, man. I don't have a good read on that one.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because you're right. There's that whole storyline, Sark going up against Washington, and Washington fans were upset they could never really get over the hump, and he's got Texas here in the playoff going up against the Dogs. I'm with you, Michelle. There's just something about this Washington team. When you're the only team in the Pac-12 era to have made an undefeated run through the conference when annually it felt like there was going to be chaos, mm-hmm. when they have just beaten everybody put in front of them, I got a hard time saying that I just don't see Washington advancing here.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm bought in. Hopefully, I don't regret that that choice. Don't make me regret it, Washington. But I think I believe in them. I think they got a little some going on. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. On the Alabama-Michigan one, until you knock off Alabama, Michelle, until you put stake through the heart of Alabama and really knock them out, I have a hard time believing that they're not going to take down Michigan. But we'll see. It'll be interesting. It's the Rose Bowl. It makes me jealous every time I watch that game because of the weather. And you got to experience the last 2 years going down there to Pasadena. It's one of those games that makes you Jones for being there in person.
Yeah. You know, very, very lucky to have been able to experience that and experience it the way that, you're kind of supposed to experience it, right? Because it's going to be different moving forward. It just is. But yeah, that incredible to be able to do that back to back.
Yep. All right. We will come back on the other side, wrap up this edition of the Saturday Show, the final segment of 2023. Coming up next, this is the Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Michelle Bodkin, Jay Catch, breaking things down in the sports world. All right, Michelle, we've covered a lot of topics on today's show, but it is the end of the year. Is there anything that you're looking forward to in 2024 sports-wise that you kind of want to put on the record right now?
Ooh. You know what? I'm curious to see how all this conference realignment goes. I sure. think that's going to be intriguing. I wouldn't say I'm excited for any of it. To me, it's all pretty stupid, in my opinion, and was very unnecessary and did not need to happen. But I'm curious to see how everybody kind of deals with what they signed up for. And again, I think at the beginning of the show, right, we talked about, you know, these players having money dangled in front of them, but not necessarily having people around them saying, hey, like, you know, this could be a con. Have you looked into this? Have you thought about this? You know, there's other things that should be considered. I think the same thing happened with conference realignment. And, you know, people are now going to have to lay in the beds that they made.
Yeah, the other thing about it is we're at risk of having another summer dominated by conference realignment if this Florida State stuff really does go down.
Yeah, and that will be fascinating to watch, thank goodness. I don't really have to say much about that. Not my problem. But it will be interesting to watch from afar and see if the cage rattling that took place with the Pac-12 and Big 12 also takes place with the ACC, and if it doesn't eventually yield the desired result for the parties that are doing the cage rattling.
Well, sure, and that I'm with you on that. There is a lot of stuff going on, but yeah, I've got some thought in my head, Michelle, that at some point we're gonna see almost a reconstitution of certain conferences because of it feels like the unsustainable nature of some of this. But that doesn't feel like a 1 year fix. That feels like something that's maybe years down the line. But we'll see. It's gonna be very interesting to see how everything kind of shakes out. Who ultimately realizes that hey, maybe we're a little too hasty in making that decision there, but at the same time, they're making a lot of money this on top of it, all the same.
I mean, maybe. I don't know that people really thought through the expense. No. Are they really making the kind of money that they think they were going to make? I don't know. Well, I'm not convinced, but
yeah.
you know, it again, not my problem. I'm just here to give an opinion on it. So.
What are you talking about, Michelle? Come on, you have all the decision-making power. Come on now.
I should, because we would not be in half the messes that we are in the sports world if I had all the power. But you know, it is what it is. So you just kind of go along for the ride, and I guess occasionally have moments where you go, I told you so. Not that my I told you so matters in the grand scheme of things, but hey.
There you go. All right. Well, for Michelle, I'm Jake. Have a great New Year's, everybody. We'll be back on Tuesday with live programming here on the KSL Sports Zone. Thanks to Christian for producing, as always. This has been the Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.